there, and welcome to Star Wars Music Minute, where we celebrate the music and sound of Star Wars 5 cinematic minutes at a time. I'm Chrysanthi Tan, you can call me Xanthi, and today's episode is based on minutes 106 through 110 of Star Wars Episode 8, The Last Jedi. In this set of minutes, Kylo and Rey join forces against the Praetorian Guards. Poe says, full speed. Kylo once again asks Rey to join him, and Holdo gets in the command chair of the Raddus and gets ready to do something. Joining me today is Kyle Katarn, a Star Wars YouTuber who covers canon content, reacts to fan films, and so much more. I'm really excited to talk to you, Kyle. Thanks for coming.
Hello there. Thanks for having me on the show.
We have some juicy minutes ahead of us.
Oh, yes.
And just right off the bat, do you have any like initial thoughts about the music or sound that you want to share? Just like initial reactions?
Well, as you said, it's a juicy 5 minutes. I feel like this is perhaps the 5 minutes when all of the different major themes that have been building throughout the entire movie come to a head. And this is where they really interact with each other in the most like intense ways, because this is like three simultaneous segments that are being like stitched together, and they each have their own unique musical situations, and they had to interact in like the seamless way. And it's possibly the most chaotic section for that reason, I think.
It
so
is,
much happened.
It is chaotic. That's for sure. I think this set of minutes and also next week's 5 minute chunk are really rich with development. I mean, I think next week is when there's even more of an apotheosis happening, but I'll get to that there. And here we have like, oh my God, just this great action cue, like smack dab in the middle. But before we get to that, let's go in like chronological order of the 5 minutes. How's that sound?
I'm down. That sounds great.
Sweet. So the very first thing we get is like Kylo and Rey back to back, like about to take on the Praetorian Guards.
And they're circling them.
Yeah. And the holdover from the last, you know, in the seconds preceding where this minute starts, we're getting the Force theme. Stated in a very declarative way without the like major chord, it's sort of like do 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 Timony do 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 do, and then it sort of pauses, and we're in this set of minutes,
and then
go ahead.
Yeah, the note continues, and suddenly it grows really dissonant, and it creates this like uncertainty and danger. You just went from this like very pronounced the Force theme, and now like, oh, what's going to happen? Snoke is dead. They're turning on them. And this is the moment before they start fighting together. They haven't worked together. And we have this uncertainty in that like dissonant chord of like, oh, wait, that's not where the Force theme goes. Where are we going now? And then the fight begins.
Yeah. And I think what is done so beautifully here, both visually and I don't know, is there like a slow-mo happening?
I think so.
When they turn around?
They definitely milk the shot of the guards like getting into formation. I think it is slowed down.
Yeah, because it feels like the action is suspended for a moment and then it goes. Like there's like a starting gun, and the music actually is suspended at that time too. So it kind of goes like do 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 do, and then it sort of there's like a sustain thing that's not in the brass, it's more like in the strings, I think. Is it the strings? I don't know, but either way it's sort of more of a less of an action-y thing and more of a suspension, more of a sustain.
It's like tension.
Yeah, while they're like turning around in slow-mo. And then the music is set in motion when their lightsabers first clash. So it's like, I love how it's synced there. And immediately when their lightsabers clash, it goes to the other thing. Do-do-do-do-do, whatever. This really exciting, pretty long cue with lots of accented brass stabs and tone clusters and sort of woven themes that come in and out and lots of sound design. Oh my gosh, it's wild.
It sounds very choreographed to match the movements of the fighters and like the way that they have those big staccato bursts and they sync up with all of the major lights, like the hit connections. Like it's a great example of like the fight being a dance that matches the music, you know?
That's literally something I wrote in my notes. I wrote, just as the fight is well choreographed like a dance, the music is well choreographed. Yes.
Following that, I really like how it very quickly establishes, okay, so we're here in the throne room. We're here on the transport with Poe. And then we're here on the hangar with Finn and Rose. And they had three very different ways of conveying the tension of those scenes. Like the tension in the throne room, it's fast, it's choreographed, it's action. There's a lot of hard hits and it's very staccato. And then we move to these horns, these very legato horns, as we're watching what the Poe's helplessness out the window. It's epic and it's sweeping, but there's not much immediate that he can do. And you kind of feel that, like, he's looking at the big picture right now and he's very small here. And I feel like the legato kind of makes me feel like that. And then we cut to the hangar and there's just these low tremolo strings happening. And it's very like, I don't know, I don't want to call it a traditional feeling of tension. I just feel like it's used very often to convey that. Like,
do you mean when we're with like Finn and Rose and DJ and
in the hangar like, bay of the ship?
On the supremacy.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Right before, I think it's in that moment. It might have been the 5 minutes prior where he gets that amazing slap from General Hux.
Oh,
one
it was
of my
the
favorite
la-
moments.
I think it was
in
the last
whole 5 minute. That
was in
the previous,
is, yeah. But still, they're in the same place, and this is when Finn's
in
like,
that location,
"You murdering,
yes.
in, you murdering bastard," and DJ's like, "Take it easy. They blow you up today. They blow or you blow them up tomorrow. It's just business." Here, so yeah, okay, so. Accurate. We like cut to all these different things because in this whole like 15 minute section, we're really seeing all the different plots that are, you know, coming to a climax at the same time. And it's very convenient. And here on the First Order ship, I'm not to be a broken record. I say this every time we're on the Supremacy is just like the reverb. Never trust a room with that much reverb. It's just so sparse. Like the music almost, it doesn't stop because you're right. There is definitely underscore there, but it's not like a music video, like the fight scene is more so.
It's in no way the forefront. It's very much behind everything else in this scene. Yes.
Yeah. So it's echoey. It's sparse. The dialogue, the really cutting, dialogue is really front and center, and it's sort of like, I don't know, it kind of reminds me of like going, does being in detention feel like this? Sort of like, I don't know, going to a place where you know that like you're not fighting, but you're just like in trouble and like shit. And here we get this, I don't know, I couldn't hear it well enough to know if it is actually a motif, but it sounds like very First Order-y. Type of thing, but lower. And that's just something that I notice when there's First Order stuff happening, you know, low stuff.
Nice little foreboding cues.
Yeah, gotta have them. And wait, do you have anything more about that scene?
Mostly I just commented on how they came up with such different forms of tension for three very different tense scenes. And it was, there wasn't much in the music. Like you said, it was very just like accents in the bass background.
You mean on the First Order ship?
On the First Order hangar. Yeah, exactly. And it kind of swells like in a very muted way when DJ like doesn't really defend himself, but kind of says, calm down, kid, you know? Mm-hmm. Which by the way, you blow them up today. They blow you up today, that you blow them up tomorrow, I believe is a reference to the story situations in Star Wars Battlefront 2, because there is a game mode where the New Republic gets the drop on a Resurgence class Star Destroyer in an asteroid field. And I think it's the third objective in the gameplay is to blow up fleeing First Order transports that are full of stormtroopers and don't have weapons on board. And as a dutiful New Republic X-Wing pilot, you blow the crap out of these unarmed transports. So you really do blow them up tomorrow. And that series of games was released in tandem with The Last Jedi. So I would be,
it'd be
easy to believe that that is in fact a correlation to what DJ's saying. Maybe he had a point.
Oh, what's the game again?
Star Wars Battlefront 2. It's the Starfighter Assault game mode in one of the First Order settings. One of the things you do is blow up First Order transports full of stormtroopers that are fleeing the battle, not even engaged.
Good to know. Cool. Thanks for sharing that. Yeah. Okay. That's cool. Also, it's just true. I agree with DJ, but something I do kind of like about that whole tension between DJ and Rose and Finn, who feel very strong in their conviction, and DJ who feels very strong in his apathy toward having a conviction is like all of them are right. And I feel like it's the perfect, it's the perfect sort of tension to sort of appeal differently to maybe, I don't know, the child in me. If I saw this when I was a child, I probably would have sided with Rose and Finn and been more like dismissive of DJ, but, you know, still feeling right. Like I was seen in my opinion and in my convictions. And as an adult, I can now appreciate also DJ's point of view. And so I think it's nice how there's a few different levels of understanding there.
Yeah, they could have worded that scene to where, you know, one side is objectively right and DJ is just like letting everyone down, but there's something to what he's saying. And, you know, that was a conscious choice and I appreciated that. Mm-hmm. Getting a bit more nuanced in the philosophies behind these different factions fighting this big war, you know. It's not always a good guy and a bad guy. Everyone has a different shade of perspective from it. And DJ is no exception.
Yep. And then we are back to the fight. And I wrote in my notes, vwomp, wait. Vwomp, vwomp, vwomp. The light whip sound.
Oh, yes. I love that sound.
I love it too. It is something that I think was the first time we saw that in a movie. I don't know if it was in a game prior to that, but...
Not a game that I am familiar with. I have never seen one.
I bet it'll be in High Republic games, though.
I hope so.
Yeah, probably. But here, something that struck me is how fast the lightsabers are moving. And I know that's like the most ridiculous observation, but this is moving like very fast. And I think about like, sometimes I dismiss lightsaber fighting. I mean, I don't dismiss it, but I don't think like being able to wield a lightsaber means you are force sensitive. Obviously, right. General Grievous and like other, I don't think, and I also am of the opinion that to get into Clone Wars, like Savage Opress, it does not feel very forcey to me. He just feels like a really great warrior to me, but that's neither here nor there. But,
I think that's correct.
But the way that Kylo and Rey fight with their lightsabers is like it's just so fast that it makes me, it renews the sense of like force awe in me. Because maybe there's other types of people who are good at fighting with swords. And okay, laser swords is going to be like a step up. And then to be able to do it that fast and trust that you're going to be okay is like another step of virtuosity.
Totally. There's something mystical about their level of skill. It's above proficient. Because, I mean, in the lore, what makes you effective as a lightsaber user is not the ability to swing it real fast. It's anticipating three moves ahead from your opponent through the Force. And that's why only Force users are effective with lightsabers. Like, Han Solo can cut Tauntauns open all day, but he's not going to stand against anyone who can use the Force training or otherwise. And so it makes me wonder about the Praetorian Guards and their level of training, because they're doing some pretty fast moves themselves. Like, what's their level of force sensitivity to be able to hold their own against a force dyad like Kylo and Rey?
Yeah, that's a good point. The Praetorian Guards are, like, I don't know very much about them. I don't know if you do, but I know that their armor looks actually more effective than some other people's armor.
Some of the helmets and some of the ways that they have, like, spikes coming out seem actually functional for once.
And also, like, their shoulder pads have more, like, levels of articulation, so yeah, they like can probably bend them better, like a like a roly-poly.
maybe that's their unlocked maneuver. If they push all the buttons, they can roll up into cannonballs, like in Hook.
If they turn into droidicas.
Yeah, exactly. It's like a force armadillo with spikes.
Oh my gosh, that would be cool.
But I don't know much about the Praetorian Guards. I know that two of them are supposed to be twin siblings. And I think that comes from the visual dictionary and not from an actual like piece of media. In the comments, please let us know if this is correct or not, because I could be wrong about where they actually show up. But I know that they are twin siblings. And these are the two. One of them is the one with the light whip.
Okay.
Because during the sequence, I think it's during the greater fight scene, one of the guards tries to rescue another guard. And those are supposed to be the twins. Yeah.
Okay, so there are so many sounds happening there, it's a little bit overwhelming. Like, there's multiple levels, obviously. So on the music side, there's like the brass stabs that are, they are, what's it called? Like syncopated. And they're also, it's kind of reminiscent of the asteroid field, to be honest, where it's like do, 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 do. And a lot of them are like tone clusters, which I don't know, we talked about a couple episodes, but it's like basically you're key smashing a few notes, like, but it's with brass. And the tempo is not
enough to do that in his fight scenes.
Yeah. And something that I appreciate about it is, at least in like a John Williams action cue, I feel like there's not normally a consistent beat. So you can't like tap your way through it with a metronome. Like it's totally. Not like, cause that's also a totally valid way to score, you know, like an action set piece would just be to like, I don't know how to describe this, but if you, it's like the difference between this film and maybe like a Bad Batch action cue, which that's, or like an animated TV show action cue, which would be more like, okay, it's going to be like 8 bars of 120, and it's going to be like exciting because you're going to have like a drum beat going on, and there's going to be a groove to it, but you're not going to have like all these curves in the middle.
I've been saying for a very long time that John Williams, one of the things that I love the most about his combat scoring is how hard to follow it rhythmically it can be, because I think it really represents the chaos and cacophony of a fight. Like if you listen to like Hans Zimmer, Howard Shore, Danny Elfman, it sounds like a very aggressive dance number that's happening during the action sequences. But with John Williams, like,
I think it depends.
In the best way possible, it sounds like a horn section falling down the stairs. Like half the time, there's just all these different things going on. And it's like, it's very overwhelming at times, and it's supposed to be. It's really showing that like, there isn't really a flow to this. It is chaos, it is dangerous. And it's just as accelerating and disorienting for our heroes as it is for the audience. And I think he has a really unique way of conveying that with this like abandoning rhythms and going to a new rhythm halfway through like the same set of chords and things like that.
Yeah, like switching up the meters and just like switching up the order of things. It just kind of keeps you on your toes. It's a different style of, I guess it's a different style of composing overall. And that's a whole other subject, but interspersed, in those action stabs, he does insert Ray's theme, I believe once. Okay. So he inserts Ray's theme, and it's like in the 2/3 through their fight, I would say.
Ironically, it's while she's being overpowered.
Oh, say more.
Ray's theme first comes in when she charges in, the guy blocks, and now suddenly she's reversing, and then she gets knocked down, and that's when you first hear Ray's theme. It's 1 minute, 52 seconds into this 5 minutes.
Yeah, okay, that's true. Yeah, you do hear it when she's getting knocked down, and I took that as sort of like her going back to her almost origins and rising back up. Totally. It reminds me of when she is alone swinging her lightsaber on Octo just by herself, and then like cuts that rock, slices the rock, because it's the same. Cause Rey has like 4 themes, right? So is, in this case, it was this one. And that's another thing is like, normally it would go.
Right, they took the triplet out.
Yeah, like normally I think it's like a 16th, but either way, it's like fast notes. And here it was sort of a more steady declarative instance. So pay attention to the second half of it. So it was just, yeah.
It feels more like a process.
It feels more like...
like she's in the middle of developing.
It feels like more developed than... Or at least in a more serious mode.
It sounds like a progression has taken place since the last time you heard this.
Yeah.
Like she has a newfound, whether it's a perspective, motivation, training, like you're hearing her theme has like evolved like a Pokemon a little bit. It's changing slightly.
And it's purposeful here. And yes. I think the steadier rhythm is really like, you know, having a steadier hand. It's like, yeah, she clearly has a purpose here right now. She's not just practicing. This is definitely not practice. Before getting to the end of the fight scene, I feel like we would be remiss to not talk about the sound design that is also overlaid,
yes,
like interspersed in this whole thing, because wow, there's so much. So there's all these different weapons, and some of them are new. And so they each have a new sound. Like I mentioned the whip having the whoop, whoop. Well, the whip has many sounds because, you know, there, it does many things, just like a lightsaber. But when it's at least being spun or like, what's it called? Like lassoing in the air is when you get that.
I think it's it's spinning. Idle sound, because he just stands there spinning it, you know?
Yeah, but the spin that you hear is like of it going around, like the Doppler thing. So what other weapons are present here?
We've got a couple of like staffs that are reminiscent of what the Magna Guards fought with, flanking General Grievous. But instead of being double-ended, a lot of them are like pike style. And I think one of them had two ends on it. I think the craziest sound effect in the whole thing for me is when Kylo Ren impales one of the guards and you hear the crackling of his lightsaber get much faster while it's going through him. And I think that like made me feel like maybe like the energy is now like conducting through this guy's body and then out the blade. And so it's traveling like way faster at a higher intensity or something. And I'd never heard that from a lightsaber before. When it goes through someone, it usually just is like, you know, like a and then it comes out again. But he actually had this like,
I disagree. Like, I feel like we hear that with lights. I feel like we do hear that with lightsabers. And I think we do hear it when like lightsabers are going through doors and stuff. Like
we hear loud impacts and we hear loud pierce. Like we hear the impact for sure. I'm saying we hear like the ambient blade noise.
Yeah, but okay, wait.
After the stab.
Think of when a lightsaber is actively being dragged through a wall or something.
Sure, like Qui-Gon in episode one.
It does sound like the vibrations are more focused there, sort of in this.
That's true. I guess you can hear.
But Kylo's lightsaber is very different. So is very different. So
that's mostly what I was saying. Is it is a unique sound for his blade to make. The way that crackling got so much faster, and it just sounds so dangerous and unstable.
I just love his blade. His lightsaber.
it's amazing.
It so much.
Poorly made, like a kid made it.
It's so dangerous. I love it. Okay, well, who has the best lightsaber sound?
So actually, I thought about this. I had like a knee jerk answer to that question, and then I was like, wait, you know what? No, I've got a better one for that. So my knee jerk response was going to be to say Kylo Ren because it is so unique and so distinctive and crackly.
Okay,
but actually, I think Luke Skywalker's Return of the Jedi green saber has my favorite, specifically because of his ignition sound. It's such a snap hiss. It's so like when you're turning it on, it sounds like it's about to explode and then it remembers what it's supposed to do and like focuses into a blade. Like it's
every time or in a specific scene.
And then it like shoots back down when he turns it on. There's when he comes off the speeder bike during the chase and there's a close up shot of him turning it on before he cuts the front off that speeder. That's my favorite example of his lightsaber turning on. It's just a really, really like sharp, piercing ignition sound. Most of the other ones kind of, but his is like, like it's really hot.
Like he
it's
just really charged it. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like it's at a full battery, 110% battery, and turning it on a flashlight.
Interesting. Okay. All right.
It's very refined, very honed, and very aggressive sounding. And I think that describes Luke's focus in Return of the Jedi. And I just thought it's a great pairing of saber sound and dude. So
nice.
That's my favorite.
Nice, nice. All right. So lots of sound design. Oh, there's like the nunchucks thing. Am I wrong? Are there nunchucks? Something breaks in half.
I would classify it as like a mini staff that breaks into two like fighting daggers, kind of.
Okay, because that had its own like sizzle to it.
Yeah, and it was also like it was unique. Like the blades weren't glowing the same way as like a saber blade, but it also didn't have the crackle of like a Magna Guard staff. Like I feel like there was some third party technology involved in these weapons that wasn't quite lightsaber and wasn't quite that purple electric like repellent technology that they used with the Magna Guards and everything.
I feel like you're probably correct in that they don't come from the same manufacturer.
The materials too. Like it's a whole different technology, I think.
Yeah, that's true. Probably different metals and stuff. For sure. Or not for sure, but maybe. I mean, oh my gosh, this fight. The way it ends is another very fast lightsaber moment. And Kylo is struggling. Oh, wait. First, moment of appreciation for the moment that Rey drops her lightsaber to crouch down and pick it up before it falls. That was just such a good moment. Such a good moment where she was willing to like sacrifice having it in her hand for a moment to do that. So
that's confidence. Yes. Confidence, yes. In the Force.
Yes. And also confidence in the Force is when she tosses Kylo Ren her lightsaber and it ignites facing backward. So it goes through the face of the Praetorian guard grabbing,
right,
holding him
eye.
In a chokehold. Yes. You know what surprised me is how fast she threw that lightsaber. I was like, I don't know. You're not just going to toss it. But, you know,
if
force
missed,
wielders.
Like, all over.
Oh, okay. So you think it was her that sort of made it so that it, I don't know. It's a nice coincidence.
I think it was an example of their like connection and their teamwork just being so subconscious that they didn't need to be like, hey, I'm going to throw it. And like, he already knew. He just could sense, he could feel her throwing it before she threw it. I think like it just everything about the fight underscores their connection in that way. Like they're so simpatico. And then as soon as she realizes that he needs help, she unquestioningly helps him, even though up until this moment, it has never been stated that they're on the same team, but she's still fully trying to help him. And
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we still don't know if they're on the same team, but they are by association, like because of common enemy here.
Right.
Although I think this whole fight scene is so intense and it's so like charged. And after Kylo kills that last guard, actually there's still another guard left, and that's Rey that gets the last one by the window, right? And
yeah.
The music does this like triumphant sort of like finish there, like a triumphant brass fanfare almost. As
Rey gets triumphant flourish in my notes.
Totally, yeah. Like as Rey gets the final one, and so that's how you know they're really done. And then right after that, oh my god, it's so awkward. The music just stops.
Yeah, just completely cuts out.
And I think this is like probably the most awkward, vulnerable scene in the whole movie is after like there's this really well choreographed, like the music, the sound design, like, oh my gosh, these cool Praetorian guards, this like throne room that looks like it's also a set, like it's also cinematic, and it's like they're on stage and they're doing this thing and they're like, oh my gosh, like it's just like this, I'm not using the word epic anymore. It's like this magnificent, like spectacular set of visuals that we're getting, like sparks flying literally, like there's like there's that fire dust stuff, ashes, cinder, whatever flying in the air.
It's extremely sensational.
The whole thing. Yes. See, that's what a better word than epic. So sensational. And then when it's over, it's like when it's over, it's just over, and then they're just in this room with like this whole wreckage, and there's no music to like make it cinematic, like to heighten the emotions, and it's just like, oh,
just a handful of ambient room sounds, and that's it, and just dialogue.
Where are we? It kind of, I mean, stop me because I'm like, it's so awkward.
Find it very effective.
I
like it.
Oh yeah, yeah, I like it too. I love it. It makes me also just feel like very vulnerable on their behalf. Like it strikes me as like totally. A very, like intimate situation, right there.
Yeah, I wrote down silence, very impactful absence of sound, for that. Like just the fact that everything cuts out and now you're just left with these two characters. Exactly like you said, it just feels like a slice of real life. Like this is exactly what would happen. Like they said, okay, cut, and now Kylo and Rey are talking. And we just happen to be in the room with them. Like there's no, it doesn't feel quite as produced, and therefore it feels so much more like authentic.
Yeah.
And intimate, and like you said, intimate. Yeah.
Yep. And I think that's what happens when there's no music or when the music suddenly cuts out and it becomes very obvious that something, one layer of sound is missing now. And now they have to have the like, where are we in our relationship talk?
Right. They have to have the talk.
Meanwhile, everything around them is burning. There's like a dead person. There's like a, there's dead people. There's like Snoke is still like chilling in two halves right there. How awkward. I mean, it's sort of like a post-coitus, like awkward, like, did we just do that? Like, and Kylo Ren reacts in such a way that is like, I don't know. What do you think?
It's, I like that the music stays away as to not give away what he's thinking and feeling until the moment that he comes out with it. And then the Kylo Ren theme starts to like emerge back into the scene again. But like, I feel like one of the ways that the no sound is effective there is because otherwise it would have given away his intentions. I think if they put something to underscore what he's saying until he's like, come with me, we'll rule together. Now we know where he's at. Now we hear the Kylo Ren come in.
I think that Kylo is ashamed here. I think he feels guilty too. I think he feels like kind of not necessarily regretful, but I think he feels really uncomfortable. Like,
I think so. I think anxiety.
I think
he's laying it all out on the line for her. He just killed his boss for her. He's like, there's no turning back. He needs her to be with her. So it's very, very anxious. Like, what if she says no? You know,
he's anxious, and he's also reacting in a way that, I hate that this is like familiar to me, but like, he's also reacting in a way that is like, taking it out on her. Like, they've just like had this really intense experience together, and now it's over. And what next? He's vulnerable. Like, no one knows where they stand right now, especially him, because he had more to lose. And he is taking it out on her. He's the way that he's talking to her. So like, his lines are, it's time to let the old things die. Okay. Like, that's his line that he says all the time, is it's time to let the old things die. Snoke, Skywalker, the Sith, the Jedi, the rebels, let it all die. But the way he says it is like so desperate. It's like, and he's trying to convince himself too. And I feel like it's really well acted here. And I feel just like this pathetic, like, child, doesn't know what to do with himself. And so he's just going to taunt Rey. Like, he just digs into her, like, everything. And it feels like he's just trying one technique after another. Because his lines here are pretty awkward. Like, they're really weird. I think his lines here are pretty awkward and, like, not sincere as one complete statement. And I think the way that it makes sense to me is that he really, that's his state of mind right now. He's just like, join me. We can rule together. You're nothing. Like, let me just drive that point home a little bit more.
Right.
And we get his hesitant theme, because Kylo Ren has like a few themes too. And instead of getting the, instead of getting that one, we get the, and that's the theme that plays when he's not as confident in himself, when he's not really Kyloing out, when he's,
I've called that his meditation theme before, because most scenes of him with the Vader helmet, that's the predominant score.
That's like a, yeah, that's a really good example, because actually in that scene where, you know, the one toward the beginning of the movie when Snoke is really like, take that helmet off, like whatever, that whole helmet thing, we get a progression of Kylo having this theme during Snoke. And then when he gets like his rage, then it goes into the, so as his anger, like, and confidence is boiling up, it transitions to his more aggressive theme. But here, right, when he's talking to Kylo, it's like his I'm unsure of myself theme.
It's, yeah, it's the real Kylo talking. It's the raw underneath the helmet that he's, you know, he's revealing it to Rey. And he's, you're absolutely right. I feel like he is taking it out on her, but he's doing it in this last ditch effort to turn her, because he has no, there's nowhere for him to go otherwise. He has no turning back. He wants to do it with her. Like, he's trying to, he's in the same moment. I agree that it's brilliantly acted by Adam Driver, because he's at the same moment urging her to join him and convincing himself that what he did can be justified. And he, in the same breath. He's saying it to herself and he's saying it to him with completely different reasons. And I think that that's really conveyed really well, like on his face and in the uncertainty of what he's saying. And also in the more meditative Kylo Ren theme playing in the background, showing that he's at a more vulnerable state. He's not big bad Kylo with the helmet saying, join me or die. He's saying, please, Rey, like, I need this.
Yeah. If I didn't know the story and I was just looking at his face during this, I would think he's saying like, mommy, don't leave or something like that. Like, he just looks so like in need of help and he's bullying the crap out of her. And it's like the stereotypical like bully who is also just really, really hurt and clearly projecting everything. And it's and the way that Rey reacts to it is so like sort of understated. Of course, she's like, she's sad, she's probably let down, but she's really quite calm about it. And it kind of, it's like he's the one lashing out, not her. She's like, whoa, dude.
It's like the conflict that they just both experienced pushed them each further down their own respective paths. And now he's a little bit more wrapped up in let's rule this thing. And she's a little bit further towards rising above it, like Jedi who have come before her. Like when Kenobi encounters Maul in the desert. Look what you've become, a rat in the desert. And he responds, look what I've risen above.
Yeah. Like
this, she's been propelled towards that state of existence just a little further by this experience that they shared.
Yeah.
Because they're the dyad, but they're opposites. So they go in opposite directions.
So I think that Kylo is not like as dark as he wants to be, as he thinks that he wants to
be.
For
sure.
And I think that's why here he's also just like throwing out everything that he knows he should be feeling. I don't think he's even convinced that he wants to do this whole path. I think he just like wants something. I think he wants like some sort of security. But even without psychoanalyzing him, like, look at all the techniques he tries in rapid succession. So first he says his line, it's time to let old things die. Snoke, right. Skywalker, the Sith, the Jedi, the Rebels, let it all die. That dramatic line. Rey, I want you to join me. We can rule together and bring a new order to the galaxy. Rey, don't. And then Rey's like, don't do this. Don't do this, Ben. Please don't go that way. No, you're still holding on. Like, let go. Which is like, it's sort of like, what is, I feel like no one had a problem with letting go until he kept saying, let the past die. Like, he's talking to himself.
Absolutely.
Do you want to know the truth about your parents? Like, he's like, switch gears. Let me try the parent angle. Like, do you want to know the truth about your parents, or have you always known? And you've hidden it away. You know the truth. And then like, he's just like, he can't just chill with that. He's like, they were filthy junk traders who sold you off for drinking money. They're dead in a pauper's grave in the desert.
He's not getting the reaction.
You have no place in this story. You come from nothing. And then he's not done. You're nothing. It's like a weird emphasis. Like he's imitating himself. He says, you come from nothing. You're nothing. And the way he repeats that is just, it reminds me of just, I don't know, just reminds me of when you're talking to yourself and you're like, yeah, that sounds good. Let me say that part again.
Reaffirming for his own sake rather than necessarily to try and break her down, which he's also doing. It's like he feels like the clock is ticking on him and he's running out of options and he's just throwing everything he can at her to see what sticks. And the fact that she is feeling a bit more serene because she's just undergone this weird catharsis moments earlier, she's not showing enough of a reaction and he's not getting what he wants out of her. And so he's upping the ante. And now it's not just, okay, everybody needs to die. Like, your parents were nothing. You're nothing. Like, he's getting frustrated. I think that he's being frustrated that he's not being able to like drive her to despair just with his words, because he thinks that he has that power.
Yeah. And the point where she does react is actually the point where he starts driving it home more, which is sort of like, I don't know, it feels like the typical like abusive thing that people do when they're trying to manipulate others is like you go for all the angles. And then the one that is starting to work, you dial in on that one. Cause what happens is like, so he starts the parent angle. Do you want to know the truth about your parents, or have you always known? Here we get like a string trill sort of sustain. And you've just hidden it away. Then we get Rey's theme again, but just barely. You know the truth, say it. And then Rey actually says, they were nobody. That's all she gives him though. They were nobody. And then that's when he doubles down on, they were filthy junk traders. They're dead in a pauper's grave. You have no place in the story. You come from nothing. You're nothing. And then here it kind of ends in this like, and when he says, join me, it's so awkward. When he says, join me, we get this. I don't know if you can hear. There's like a clash, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And it repeats three times. So what's happening there is like it's a B minor chord with in the orchestra with like an F sharp on top, really emphasized. Like, and then there's another note that just is a half step off. So it can be thought of like as a clashing note. And it just rubs up right there. And that's the end of that. That's
tension, the end of them. You know?
Yeah. Awkward.
It's like not, he's saying all these terrible things to Ray, but now he's saying, join me. And it's creating tension because she knows she's going to have to tell him. Well, she already knows she's going to tell him no, but she knows that she's reaching a decision point and he's not going to like it. And so that tension starts seeping back in because up until this moment, it's been so quiet in the scene. Like yeah. As soon as the fight ended, it's been almost totally quiet. There's been a little bit of accent. And now that sort of like signifies the beginning of, okay, we're moving back into a point of action again, like not quite to the level of before, but like a decision's coming up. Ray's going to have to make a move here. And you hear it foreshadowed right there.
Yeah. You can hear like the disagreement, basically. You can hear that it's not really working out. That was like so intense to watch in the theaters, that scene. I remember that being like, whoa, I was not expecting to come to a Star Wars movie and see this whole thing. Wow. So then we get to Holdo on the Raddus, clearly about to do something.
Yes. There was a massive like crescendo and a fanfare as we're seeing, because right before we see Holdo, we get a wide shot in space of all these transports getting destroyed. And we hear the impending doom of the New Republic, like, or of the Resistance, I guess, at this point. Like, we see it before our eyes. It's loud. As you would hate to say, it's epic. There's just, like, a lot going on. And then Holdo is watching, and we see it from her perspective. And, like, it's the loud, big crescendo and fanfare. And then suddenly it becomes very refined and very deliberate. And the music becomes, like, syncopated and very rhythmic again. And you can hear that Holdo's had an idea, and now she's acting on it. And we don't know what the idea is yet, but it's that the music doesn't have this undertone of, oh no, despair, we're all gonna die. Now it's like, dun, dun, dun,
dun, dun, dun. It's resolute.
We've got a plan. We're springing into action. And I thought that was really well conveyed, that like, yes, she's still looking upon doom and gloom, but it's doom and gloom with a plan now. And you hear that in the rhythm.
It's purpose. It's...
Yeah, absolutely, purpose. Yeah.
Type of thing is happening. And she is ready to command that ship. She has clearly made her decision. There's no turning back. She sees what's out there. And yeah, I mean, when I just think about this moment and I don't know, ruminate on what it's like to be Holdo right now, I think she's just such a hero. I mean,
absolutely. She's 100% thinking bigger picture.
Yeah. Oh, I get like chills thinking about Holdo.
I have my own rant about defending Holdo that I could get into, but I don't think Holdo did anything wrong in that movie.
No, me neither. What do people normally criticize?
It's unfortunate. A lot of people think that Holdo should have somehow been beholden to Poe this recently.
Okay,
the bone
that's
of
what
pilot
I figured.
Who's in the brig, and like somehow he was more entitled to know things that his superiors chose to keep from him while they were worried about spies, while they were being pursued by the First Order. I mean, like, not to mention Poe then goes rogue and makes everything worse, gets all those pilots destroyed by letting DJ overhear the plan. If he had obeyed Holdo's instructions from the get-go, none of that would have happened. Mm. Like, if you put yourself in her shoes, she's in here to replace a commanding officer. It's not even her ship, so she doesn't know these people. So the only thing she has to go on is that Poe just got demoted for getting half the squad killed, ignoring orders. And now he's in the brig for insubordination. And now he's here questioning your orders. Like, he could have made a better first impression and tried to work with her, I think.
Yeah. I'm with you. That's normally what I hear too, but I just don't understand how that would have anything to do with her maneuver that she's about to do. And so I think sometimes the criticism of Holdo extends to like being just upset about Holdo and Poe's relationship. And then I think it gets extrapolated to criticizing this maneuver, even like criticizing the legitimacy of like everything about her. And so
taken a little too far, yeah. I think.
Agreed.
Like, why didn't they just do that all the time? It's like, well, you know how expensive
enormous ships are. Does not seem practical to do this. Yeah.
And also, we're not trying to glorify suicide bombing in Star Wars. Believe it or not, we're not trying to do that. So it's like, imagine. There's all kinds of reasons why it's just not feasible for that to be some sort of a sustainable solution that they do all the time. But I don't know, people will take any criticism and run with it if it plays into not liking the bigger narrative of this character.
Well, I'm just going to put it out there. If I were part of a resistance, I would not be immediately volunteering to do that. I wouldn't.
I would be like, can we double check that we're out of droids first?
Yeah. So yeah, she has more courage than I do, certainly. Do you have any other thoughts about the music or the sound or the action? I mean, I certainly have some more like big picture thoughts to share. But
sure. Mainly just that it is all awesome. And the sound design is excellent during this sequence. And the fight sounds so good. And, you know, I've already rewatched it many times, but I could rewatch it many more and hear a lot of things I haven't heard before still, because it's just so layered and so dense. One thing that I love visually about the sequence is that it starts off with the big, lovely red curtains all surrounding the throne room. And after the nunchuck things get thrown off and stuck in the cloth, it starts a fire. And eventually it burns down every single piece of cloth, revealing massive windows. And suddenly we can see the ramifications of the fight. And now Rey can see the fleet being destroyed. And it was a really cool, like, narrative way of letting these characters not move where they are, but still be in the forefront of the other action and be able to interact with that by, like, revealing these windows, by burning away the legacy of Snoke, you know, which was filling the room. How quickly it evaporated. And then he was never really important again after that. And it was kind of signified by like how all of the drapery and finery of his throne room just kind of evaporated when he died.
Oh, that's so true. Like his throne room looks so regal, like upon first glance. And so like, just so, and he's, you know, Playboy Snoke in his gold robes and just like, and also in The Force Awakens, he's like, also massive because he's a giant projection. So like everything about Snoke is just like a projection of something. It's just like
absolutely.
One big...
And that becomes true to his core. He himself is like an illusion, a projection, like a facsimile, I guess. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it quite literally, as he's cut in half, like his throne room goes up in smoke.
And it's like, not even instantaneous. Like, I like what you said about like how it starts with just the one, you know, the fire gets started in the fabric and sort of just that one, it's like it takes one flame basically to spread and destroy everything that is covering the windows.
And kind of like a spark that lights the fire, burns down the First Order.
yes, exactly. Oh my gosh, that actually also goes along with like what the music is doing here too. Because the music here, which it'll really explode in the next 5 minutes, but the music here is like building on this, on what was such a minor motif toward the beginning of the film. And I said it last episode, but in episode 2, when I was introducing the resistance leitmotifs from minutes 6 through 10, I remember saying like, oh, this one is like not that important. And it seemed really small and probably, you know, so small that it's like, is this a theme or is this just his style of writing music?
Just a little cue or something.
And that tiny seed is really blooming here. So yes, to all of that. I love it. Okay, one final thing I wanted to say is I can't tell how I feel about Rey calling Kylo Ben so consistently. Like I either I sort of love it, and I sort of am like, wonder if he feels like unseen.
I see it as a tactic. I think she knows exactly what she's doing, and it's part of how it plays into how Rey observes, and then she can do it. Like back in Force Awakens, the very first time she fires a blaster, she misses. Second shot, she nails it, and then it's dead on every single time she shoots someone. The same is true for how Kylo tries to mind trick her, and then she's able to reach into his mind without prompting. And I think in this moment, he's using calculated phrases to try and break her down, and she starts calling him Ben over and over again to do the same thing to him. I think it's a strategic move on her part. She's calling him out. You're not really Kylo. You're Ben. Stop pretending. Stop lying to yourself, Ben. You're not really the leader of the First Order, Ben. Like, that's the subtext that I got from it, was that, and she may not even realize that she's doing it, just like I feel like she started reaching into his mind during that interrogation without realizing it at first, and then suddenly, boom, oh, I'm in his mind now. Okay. I think she kind of just tried to do a reverse card on him with how he's trying to turn her. She started trying to turn him too, reminding him that he is Ben and that he's not Kylo, whoever the hell Kylo is.
Mm-hmm. She's pretty consistent about it, even when he doesn't, clearly is not liking that.
Yeah, she's dogged about it. She's like, it's not about your feelings, it's about the truth. That was the subtext that I always probably put there myself, you know, but
I mean, I think it works. It also is made me think that, like, Rey is, wow, there's some sirens happening here. Hope someone's okay. Yeah. Rey is sort of persistently wanting to manifest the light in him, like less of, okay, either she's trying to manipulate him, not in a bad way, but, you know, trying to use this technique, like you said, or something like she literally just doesn't see. I mean, she does see it, but she's not fooled for a second. And she, okay, how do I put this? It's like if I'm really depressed and I'm like not myself, and some people, and I've been that way for quite some time, like say 6 months, and like the people I meet and the people I talk to kind of get to know a different me and mm-hmm. sort of refer to me as this sort of new me, but that has a layer of depression, or, you know, a layer of,
it's like establishing a new baseline.
Yeah. It's sort of like having one friend who still sees that you're going through this, but is still like, no, I know who you are inside. I know who you are. And that this is a shroud of something.
Right. This too shall pass.
Yeah.
I think that she just intuitively tries to turn things around on people that try to use like tactics and strategies on her. And her calling him Ben is like a subtle example of that. Because Rey, it's important to Rey to see the good in people. And she absolutely has to view Kylo as a good man who's made mistakes. Because otherwise, she can't think about her parents as being good people who made a mistake and left her behind. Like, she can't reconcile these two things. And so she needs Kylo to have light in him so that she can't just abandon the idea that her parents loved her and didn't just leave her for drinking money. Like, she has to hold on to this hope that, like, no, they were good people. They made a mistake. And Ben is a good person, and he's made a mistake. And I think that that's really at the core of why she's so determined to see the light in Kylo. Like, it matters to her. More than like, it shouldn't be such a personal stake if someone else's moral alignment, but it is for her because it represents so many things to her in her own past.
Oh, that makes me like that more, even more. Yeah, because it doesn't really jive with me when people are just optimistic for like no reason, sort of just to be a good like person. But yeah, that makes complete sense that she. I mean, I like your interpretation of that. And I think for Kylo, that must make him feel like, oh, it's a hard, you're making it harder for me to like be bad right now. You're making it harder. And he's probably not used to people like who will persistently see that. Like, he's sure, maybe with his mom or with his parents, but, you know, he obviously couldn't even handle it from his dad. And right. So killing his dad was almost like him trying to convince himself that he's bad. And yeah, Rey just won't let it up.
Even that wasn't enough.
Yeah. Oh, Kylo. So much therapy he needs.
Seriously. Man, if Star Wars, if the characters had gotten therapy, it would be about this long.
Yeah, that's true. Very small.
All the way back to the Skywalkers.
What's your favorite sound? What's your favorite sound in The Last Jedi, or like favorite musical part?
In terms of like straight sound effects, it's gonna be hard to find something that beats out Kylo's lightsaber for me. I really like that crackle. But I think just the myriad of different weapons that the Praetorians Guard had when they all ignite them at the same moment, that like composite sound, I guess, is really cool. And that's not a single sound effect. It's like, but it's a group event, I guess. It's audio. In terms of the music score, I actually really like Kylo's two themes and how they go back and forth so much. And Rey's theme is like, I'll never get tired of listening to it because every time you hear it, it's different. And I think it changes the most drastically, I would say. Out of all of the different like personal themes, I think Rey's goes through the most development from the first time we hear it when she's eating her little like water bread by the on the slopes of Jakku. There you go. To the final incarnations of it that we hear, I think it really does the best job of following a character through their arc musically while still being totally like reminiscent. Like you can hear it and recognize exactly what it is every single time, but you can still hear that progression. And you can, you know, like my ear's not trained enough, but someone would be able to listen to just like a single Rey cue and be like, oh, that's Rey from like episode 8, episode 9, episode 7, halfway through the movie, first act, second act, third act, because it does have that like correlation to it. As she grows, her theme like gets a little burlier, you know?
Yeah, I think her theme gets the benefit of a lot of different orchestrations, for sure. Like it gets a really nice orchestral treatment. It gets past, yeah, it gets bigger. I think I would consider those two themes to be separate themes, but absolutely related. And sort of like what you said, when I hear that the Jakku one, I think more Rey of from The Force Awakens than Rey on Crait or Exegol.
I think if I can broaden the scope and just say sequel trilogy scores, March of the Resistance. So much fun. It's so much fun. I love how much how quick it is and how much it goes around the place. Bum, 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 There it is.
It's
I guess I just
everywhere.
have like a sense of association for the first time you hear it, and you find out Poe's alive, and you get that awesome shot of the X-wings going across the lake on Takodana. It's great. There's a band called Galactic Empire that does like metal covers of well, they say metal covers of Star Wars, but it's actually literally metal arrangements of John Williams scores, and they play it note for note, and they just like stylize it, and it's amazing. And they have a cover of March of the Resistance, and it's mwah, chef's kiss. It's so good.
What's the band? I'll definitely link to them in the show notes.
It's called Galactic Empire. Yeah, I will
Okay,
definitely
cool.
grab a bunch of links. I am evangelical about bands that I like, and they are some of the best musicians out there doing like Star Wars themed tribute music. It's great.
That's very cool. Okay, before we wrap up, I always go over what the motifs in these 5 minutes were. And so basically we got Rey's theme, we got Kylo Ren's hesitant theme, and then we got a little bit of the desperation cue, which is associated with Holdo and her sacrifice. Soundtrack-wise, we are at the track called A New Alliance, and that is during their fight. Kyle, where can people find you online?
I have a YouTube channel and a Twitch channel. I stream 4 days a week over at twitch.tv/KyleKatarn, playing a bunch of Star Wars themed games. Right now we're doing Battlefront, Empire at War, Squadrons, The Old Republic, and I'm starting a brand new playthrough of KOTOR 1 this Friday. I do reactions and reviews of fan films over on YouTube.
Star Wars
Actually,
fan
just
films?
last week. Yes, Star Wars fan films. I reacted to my 100th Star Wars fan film last
Oh
week.
my gosh.
Keep them coming. The goal is to react to every single Star Wars fan film ever made, and I will get there someday. We'll see. I've got Bad Batch reactions and other things like that going on the channel. And every Wednesday, I do dramatic readings of the canon comics that come out from Marvel and IDW. Comics with Katarn. You can catch that both on Twitch and then later on YouTube. I do it live on Twitch, and then I archive it on YouTube later that day.
So there's plenty of Star Wars content.
Basically, I'm all over the place.
Yes. That's awesome. And you can find Star Wars Music Minute on Apple Podcasts, on all the normal podcast places. And if you're listening to it as a podcast, you can also watch it on YouTube if you prefer. And I try to caption every episode, and you can see our shining faces.
A little extra shiny today with this heat wave.
Oh, yeah, that sucks. So, yeah, we're also on YouTube, and I am also doing other content on YouTube, Star Wars music-related content, other than this podcast. But thank you so much for listening, for your Apple Podcast reviews, for tuning into the Bad Batch commentary season. I mean, series, that's definitely like the first foray that I've taken outside of the podcast. And also thank you to Pete and Alex from Star Wars Minute for pioneering this format and being inspirations for me starting this show/channel. I appreciate everything you've done for the Star Wars community. Thank you to Kyle for joining me. Kyle and I actually met on Star Wars Explains.
That's right.
Live stream. And
talking
about the Bad Batch. And I just think it's really, I think it's nice how there's so many awesome, supportive, cool people in the Star Wars like podcast and YouTube community. So yes, thank you. Thank you to everyone. That's all.
And thank you for having me on the show. This was a really fun experience.
I'm very glad. And I'm flattered that I inspired you to take out your viola for the first time in a while.
I can confirm I'm still just as bad as I used to be.
Fantastic. So that's all I have to say for today. I look forward to covering the next set of minutes next week. And I am bad at ending this. See you. Star Wars Music Minute.
May the Force be with you all.